City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, the tar and cement gets tar and cemented, and we're on City Limits. It's the first Wednesday of the month, and it's therefore our transport day. But we're going to do our normal transport day next week, because today we're going to deal with disability issues because of the day. And I think we'll know the programming all day today is going to be dealing with issues to do with people with disabilities of whatever sorts. And, of course, it's two celebrations today. It's that celebration, and it's also, of course, Eureka celebration today as well. And we've had Joe, of course, overnight up there, and tomorrow night there is the Spirit of Eureka event taking place at the Eureka Hotel, which I presume was chosen deliberately, and that's about it. But on the program today, after a very brief introduction, we're going to be talking to Martin Stewart, who is a well-known activist with around issues of disability. I've known Martin for many, many years, and we're going to reminisce a bit over those periods and lead up to today in terms of, have things got better, have they not got better, because he's been such an activist over such a long time. And we're also going to be talking in the second half of the program to, so it makes it a rather blokesy program, unfortunately, but talking to a bloke called Ray Jordan, He's facilitator of a group called All Aboard, which is an action network to fight for accessibility. And we're going to talk particularly about public transport today, because it's Transport Day, and we'll talk to him about the main issues that affect people in terms of accessibility to public transport. I'll point out to both of them in the interview that I've been involved with people over many years fighting these issues, and every year the government's promised there's going to be full accessibility, and it's always going to happen in 15 years. So in 1980 something, it was going to happen in 15 years, and in 2014 it's going to happen in 15 years. So not sure we're moving all that quickly. Just before we do go to Martin, he's on the line, is he, I presume? Okay, we'll go to him in 1 second. Just a couple of things I did want to mention arising out of, arising out of the weekend's election. I thought it was interesting that a major business bloke called James McKenzie, he's not the one who is here at 3CR, but a major businessman, and he has said, so this must make us feel good, that big business has nothing to fear from the Labor government, and I'm not sure we needed to be told that. Do you think so?
I don't know. That doesn't sound too reassuring to me, no. Kevin. I'd much prefer to hear that big business has a lot to fear from the Labor government, but surprised.
That you won't hear. But another businessman who's had extensive experience in the construction business, he's now saying that the government should in fact put an administrator in to run the CMFEU, take over the union and run it for a number of years to get the bad people out.
Would that be to make sure that the CFMEU doesn't campaign for their members?
One assumes so. Wait, cup of tea?
Yes, please.
I've got to put it up here in the mic so people can hear it. There we are. I'll just put that there. This is a white Chinese tea today, you'll be pleased to hear.
It looks delicious. Have you ever considered a career as a Foley artist, Kevin? Doing sound effects.
Oh, look, I should, shouldn't I? But no, I haven't. But look, just one other thing before we go, because I think business tells us, again, big business tells us in terms of the federal government that they got a mandate, they were elected, and people should let what they want to go, the reforms they want go through. This is democracy in action, and big business believes in democracy. The government was elected democratically, has a right to get its budget through and to do all the things it wants to do. Now, with these great believers in democracy, on the very night that the Labor government was elected here last weekend, they came out and said the government should still consider building the East-West Link, even though that was the mandate not to build it. Now, I have a bit of trouble with the democratic bit here. These great believers in democracy now say ignore what the people said, trust us.
It seems like mandates mean what the business elite want it to mean. So it's reassuring to know that we don't really need to worry about mandates, and really it's just we should just be listening to what they want.
It's all things to some people by the sound of it. Look, we'll go to Martin Stewart because he's hanging on the line there and he's got to get away. Martin, welcome to City Limits this morning on this day.
Good morning, let's have a cup of tea and a chat and allow your hundreds of thousands of listeners to eavesdrop.
That's right. Well, once you leave, actually, it'll drop from 6 to 5.
Of course.
Martin, you have been involved for many, many years. In fact, I first knew you when you were part of a group called Penny, which was People for Something, and I know it was not institutionalisation. Was it equality, the bit?
People for Equality and not institutionalisation.
That's right, yes, that's right.
And now I'm working for ADDIE, who stands very proudly for the employment of people with disabilities, ADDIE being Australians for Disability and Diversity Employment. Look us up, ADDIE.com, and we're proudly there with our website displaying quite a lot of information, details, interviews. Maybe even this interview will appear somewhere. As far as the employment circumstance of people with disabilities, which is quite frankly appalling and getting worse currently. Mm.
And of course, your disability is you were born blind. You're a twin, and both of you were born blind. You and brother Murray.
Correct.
Now, going back to those Penny days, there were lots of protests. I remember protesting at tram depots because they were doing things to the things. There was a long campaign, and particularly, let's look at that one, the St Kilda Port Melbourne railway line, because that was a long campaign when the government put in the light rail. And what it meant was, of course, that people with mobility problems and accessibility problems simply got cut off from that corridor in terms of public transport.
Correct, and it was a real battle on the platforms of St Kilda Railway Station. We set up tents, and I think we got arrested about 5 times, taken away several
at least
times, mostly very unceremoniously, to be badly handled in police stations after that as well. Yes, it was a time of great tumult in the community in general, I believe, when it comes to public transport, not just people with disabilities, remembering that the trains that were there for many years, I think about around 100 years, they were the oldest line.
It was
line.
The first line in Melbourne, yeah.
Correct, and they were taken away as well from the general community to be replaced by a service which was inaccessible for people in wheelchairs.
Yes, and of course, one of the more famous people in a wheelchair, I guess, was Katie Ball, a wonderful activist for many years who unfortunately died a few years ago of breast cancer. But Katie and her mum were there, and her mum was a quite fragile woman. And I remember there was an incident where she got bashed by the coppers, did she not?
Yes, dragged around and given a slap around to remind her not to return, but she did. She did return, and Katie was always there. She participated in a hunger strike with me over that issue outside Transport House, where it was at the time. Yes, it was a really active time for people with disabilities, a time where we lost the battle, unfortunately. The situation has changed in some ways now for the better. That being said, there's a long way to go. I'm attending a meeting today because PTV removed an application for phones that was very accessible. It was actually a very accessible app, and they forgot about us and removed it, knowing full well that it was being used by people with a vision impairment to access timetable and planning information. They removed it. So we're now getting it back. It will be coming back purely because we were able to point out in no uncertain terms the errors of their ways. I'm currently testing it, but what an amazing circumstance in 2014 that something that they knew was accessible was removed. And that shows you the standing that people with disabilities have not got in this community.
And we'll come to those questions later about just how far we've come, of course. But on that one, there was a court case involved where Katie Ball took the government to court saying she'd be discriminated against because she would lose access to public transport. Now, she ended up being caught at VCAT in a major catch-22 situation. Do you want to tell us that story? Do you
remember? Yes, absolutely. She took the case, which, of course, we fully supported, in relation to that issue. when the removal of the trains were happening on those lines. She actually won the case. It was also involved with other issues as well, but she won it, hands down. But the Equal Opportunity Court said it was too expensive to bring back
the
train.
In fact, the order was this, Martin. I'll tell you the story then. Yes. Bongiorno, who later became Supreme Court judge and in the meantime was Director of Public Prosecutions, he represented the government, and his argument was that the legislation was in past tense, so you couldn't bring it to court until the discrimination had occurred.
Yes.
And Jocelyn Scutter, who was appearing for Katie, argued that that was ridiculous. You had to look at the law in common sense. But Jan Wade, who later became Attorney General when Bongiorno was Director of Public Prosecutions, ruled in favour of the government. But Jocelyn said, well, look, when we come back, they're going to use the other clause that says if the cost of redressing the discrimination is too high, you don't have to do it. And that's exactly what happened. So at no point could Katie win the case.
And don't forget, we sought an interim order on the basis that it would be expensive. And to reverse the situation, that interim order was knocked out. So we actually realised the difficulty that would be incurred and took it to an initial hearing to obtain an interim order to stop the building works going ahead so it could be heard in the status quo circumstance that would have existed. That was rejected and then came back to haunt us because we eventually were able to get a victory, but that victory couldn't be applied because the works had already occurred. I mean, how catch-22 is that?
Pretty catch-22, Martin.
I'll take
that as rhetorical.
That has happened yet again, when it came to the removal of tram conductors and station staff on trains, which is exactly why now I've got an arm and leg missing, because station staff would have been on the train.
Well, that was my next question, because you took up the issue of taking away station staff and guards off train and became a victim of same.
That's right. We actually went for an interim order, had that knocked back. Then we went back to the Equal Opportunity Courts again and we won the case. They said how discriminatory it was to remove station staff and train guards, but yet it was too expensive to bring them back. So this is a history which is littered with successful outcomes that can't be applied. And you've got to wonder whether the courts know that.
We won't tell the story. People we interviewed you at the time, but you, in fact, at Richmond Station, going home from work, stepped into the carriage you thought was the carriage because you put your cane there and felt the opening, but it was the space between the carriages, and you fell down. And of course, the driver had no idea. There was no guard, no station staff, and the train actually took off your arm and a leg.
Ironically, it would have been the guard's carriage. I was right in the centre of the train where the guards traditionally were. So there's no doubt I would have been picked up by the guard and the train would never have moved.
Yeah, it's just a classic case of discrimination. And how are you now? I mean, people marvel because, I mean, one would have thought that further setback, but last year, of course, you were leading or one of the leaders of the campaign fighting for the rights of the workers at the Vision Australia, or it's called, place in the workshop in Macaulay, where they said they could no longer afford to pay people $7 an hour.
I'm better than ever, stronger than ever, more passionate than ever. I'm out there talking about disability unemployment for poor Addie. By the way, if you're looking for that, it's ADDE, Addie. I'm really out there trying to improve what is getting worse, and we will have announcements and press statements coming up about that next year. We have a lot to do, and I'm going to be right in the middle of it, absolutely. And I'm inspired now, because I think initiatives like 3CR today, having a disability day, means that the left at last is not leaving us out, which I have to say to the left population in a general sense, you have been just as complicit as the right in leaving us out of your agenda. It should never be, because people with disabilities have a serious positive contribution to make to this world, to Australia's community, and where, in the statistical terms, we are extremely loyal employees. We will put our backs to the grindstone for anybody, but at the same time, we will expect natural justice to occur. And to have this day marks a turning point for the left, in my view, for 3CR, and for the left in general, who I really have been disappointed with over some years. It's been left to a few of us and not many of us. Now, if the left are now looking at us just as they do with Aborigine issues and women's issues and so forth, which absolutely have my support, if they're looking at our issues just as strongly, I say well done, and it's a magnificent change which I absolutely, totally support and will be a part of.
Yes, and another issue that was raised on the Brekkie Show, or referred to on the Brekkie Show this morning, but you, of course, also have been a campaigner for the rights of people with disabilities living a normal sex life, and you had one major event at Bondi Beach to make the point. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, well, I am very proud of this demonstration because people with disabilities are often seen as asexual and not interested in that very important aspect of life. That's, after all, how life begins in most cases. So it's really important to tell the community that we are part of this natural thing, of what does come naturally, and therefore we wanted to demonstrate how natural it is and how it's, and you know, just as important part of life as what it is for anybody else. And yes, I had a demonstration on Bondi Beach. I thought, why not go to Australia's icon when it comes
and
to beaches.
This was the morning after you got married, of course.
Correct. I wanted to keep it a bit tasteful. We had to appeal to conservatives as well as progressives, we thought. And we consummated our marriage on that beach, and I did it proudly as well with a person in a wheelchair, Ellen Stoll, who was in Los Angeles doing the same thing. And we said sexual equality for people with disabilities across the world.
And at least discreetly, I think if I recall the footage, it was under a blanket. If I
correct. Recall. Oh, yes. We were being tasteful, but at the same time, we were making a very strong point.
So it's sort of a porn movie on Bondi Beach.
Absolutely. And I remember my wife at the time, Helen, calling out, give him his pants. And I thought, well, why give me my pants? We're trying to prove a point without pants at the moment.
Yes, fair enough. Well, moving on to now, of course, we've talked about what you're doing now, but in terms of all those struggles over all those years, we must have come forward in some ways, but just what ways do you think we've come forward, and what other ways do you think we haven't come forward? There's still lots of work to be done.
Well, as I said, I think today 3CR has come forward for a start, so that's a good starting point. I think the left, therefore, must be coming forward for 3CR to support this Disability Day.
Well, we do these broadcasts every year on this.
Yeah, I understand but I do think it's becoming more seriously attended to, and I do think it's the adjustment that's being made when it comes to thinking about the issues in general is becoming much deeper as a result of this. So I do believe that 3CR are taking it a lot more seriously, and I think that is very apparent in your approach that you're taking. And the union movement, the fact that some of the union movement did come out for us for Vision Australia Enterprise, shows that they're starting to get on board, when before it's almost an attitude, oh, well, if people with disabilities get a job, that's one less for us, when in fact we are the us, we are the we, well, we're part of it, we're part of the general community. That's the way I see it, and it's the way everyone should see it. So inclusion is at least being talked about. The word inclusion is being used a lot more often. The results aren't there yet, but I think if people start from the time they wake up in the morning to the time they maybe even sleep, maybe sleep with someone in an inclusive manner. But the point I'm trying to make is that from the time you wake up, or from the time you're born, from the ground floor, if you think inclusion Yesterday, for example, there was a guy who was talking about this flawless invention that he had, which was a new password system, which would be through the cornea, which he says is a one-off password because the cornea changes a little every single time you look at something. So he was saying how magnificent and flawless...
I heard that interview, yeah.
...his invention would be. Well, if he thought inclusively, he would have said, however, we've got a bit of work to do with those that have prosthetic eyes or who have severe vision impairment. I intend to get on to him to remind him that before you roll it out, please make it inclusive, and you've got to introduce a mode into that system which will include prosthetic eyes.
Mm.
So he'll realise that his system is flawed at the moment and is discriminatory if rolled out as is. Now, if we have an inclusive attitude from the beginning of inventions, from the beginning of our thoughts and practices, we will naturally make sure that every member of the community is included in anything that we do, say, think or invent.
Yep. Martin, the one other one I did want to raise, because I think it shows just the incredible, even old cynics like us can occasionally boggle at just how remarkable bureaucrats can be. When you went under the train and lost your arm, you were no longer able to use a Braille watch. And so you applied for them to buy you a talking watch, and they rejected you on the grounds of...
on the grounds that it was a pre-existing disability and I was already totally blind before then, so I would have needed that anyway, so we'll reject you on those grounds.
That's right. Although they didn't realise they were up against it, of course. I mean, the silly fools took you on and you got your talking watch, no doubt.
Absolutely, yes, because I was able to display, yes, but under the pre-existing disability, I wouldn't have needed one around my neck, whereas now I do.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is amazing how the bureaucracy will come up with a reason not to do something. Just remember that the TAC is an insurance company, and we all know that insurance companies always operate on the basis we're there but don't use us.
Mm. Well, it only uses us to actually pay the bill.
Oh, that's right. I mean, insurance companies basically are set up for people to pay in, and we'll fight very hard to make sure we don't have to pay out.
Mm. That's what they're all about.
I'm very happy that they exist, by the way, because the existence of it is a good thing, but you have to fight so much to get anything from them.
Yes, so clearly you're saying there's still a lot of work to be done, I think, Martin. That's the bottom line.
There's a lot of work to do, but a lot of work has been done, and there are some changes. I mean, technology is changing the game to some degree of its own accord. However, can I just say that in itself can cause problems? We've got the government currently importing inaccessible programs for workplace use. So a lot of the time a person gains employment only to find that they're isolated from performance in that job because the outdated software that is being used shuts them out of being able to operate on their desktop and transmit and communicate the way that their fellow workers do. And that's a real issue. And there's so much, and can I just say, much to Australia's shame, countries like America and England are doing so much better in that way, and they're the personification of capitalism. And yet Australia, who prides itself on being a fair and just country, yeah, we'll have a laugh about that one, that they are importing software from other areas which is completely inaccessible, and they know it because they've been advised of this fact.
Mm.
So, you know, even technology, although the possibilities are increasingly available for accessibility, if you purchase the wrong form of technology, you can actually shut people out, as with the new password system that may be coming to us. If that doesn't have the necessary changes in it that will take into account people with prosthetic eyes, of which I'm one of them, we'll be shut out from websites that require passwords.
Yeah, so accessibility isn't just accessibility to buildings, etc., but it's also accessibility to those sort of issues.
I go back to what I said before. There's got to be inclusive thinking. There's got to be inclusive action, and there's got to be inclusive practicing. So from the very beginning, from the time you are born, we've got to have in societal change we've got a habit that everyone thinks of everyone else from the beginning. And I know that sounds very Milky Way type stuff, but I believe it is possible. We pride ourselves on improvements as a human race. Well, the only way we're going to prove those improvements is to have a natural process of including everyone that exists in this world from the time that you are born to the time you die, and all your practices and all your inventions from the ground floor up include everyone. And it's so easy to do. I even believe that a family home should be naturally able to be accessible for people in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Why should it be that you have a coffee with your friends, sorry you can't come because you're in a wheelchair, into my living room because I've got three steps into my house? You know, even to the end point of a private home, it should be legislated that it must be accessible. Never mind the public buildings only. What about the private buildings, the private factories, industries, the whole bit?
Yep.
It seems so much common sense, doesn't it? But it just doesn't happen.
Yep. So there's still a long way to go then, unfortunately.
There is a long way to go, but I'm an optimist and I've got passion, I've got belief, and I'm damn well going to be beating the drum probably even in my last breath.
Yeah, I mean, you're off to see bureaucrats today. I must say, when you get involved, even I start to feel sorry for them.
But, well, it's all right. Just keep drinking that tea.
Okay, Martin, look, thanks for your time today.
Thanks very
much. And go up there and get into them.
Thank you. I'm going to PTV right now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks
okay,
a lot, Martin.
Bye.
Martin Stewart there, who's, as we said, is a long, I think you can tell from the interview, a long-term activist and fighting on, and despite that further setback with the accident on the train, he's up and running and still going, so it's quite amazing. Okay, look, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and have a... Oh, no, before we take a quick break, actually, I'm going to say something else. Helen Syed, who was, in fact, Martin's wife in the Bondi incident, Helen has written a book about her father, a biography, which we're going to interview her about. This is a publicity for next year's programming. We're going to interview her because around about middle of March, when it's Harmony Day, because her father's going to be honoured for his multicultural work in Hobson's Bay, but he's currently, in fact, the Citizen of the Year in Hobson's Bay. And his life's been revolved around multicultural issues here in Australia. It's also been involved around trade union activism. And before that, coming from Egypt, he was there, of course, when the State of Israel was established, and he was heavily involved in all that. So the book covers all that, the state of Israel being set up, his experiences in Egypt at that time, and he's in Australia as an Egyptian migrant getting involved in trade unions, multiculturalism, etc. Sounds like a really good book to me, and great subject. And as I say, he's such a community activist. He's Citizen of the Year in Hobson's Bay, and he's going to be honoured again for multiculturalism this year. And around that time, the book is going to be launched. So we do intend to interview Helen about that issue. So it's a bit something to look forward to, I think. Early next year, and probably sometime in March when we come back in February, by the way. So that's still to do that. Now we're going to take a quick break, come back, and we're going to talk to Ray Jordan, the facilitator of All Aboard, about other issues or related issues to do with accessibility on public transport.
Buy a ticket in the 3CR raffle and you could be styling up with a new dye job, kindly donated by Mario at Fluff Hair, 46 Smith Street, Collingwood. Tickets are only $2 each, so you really need to be in it to win it. The raffle will be drawn live on air on Lazy Wednesday afternoon with Kate and Susie at 3:30 p.m. on the 17th of December. Buy a ticket, drop into the station during business hours, or better still, call us on 9419 8377. And sell a book to your friends. Fluff Hair is a 3CR supporter.
Wednesday, 3rd of December is International Day of People with Disability. Celebrate disability culture and pride on 3CR with talented activists, performers and broadcasters from Australia and all around the world. We'll have a big bold breakfast with Finn and Daniel from The Boldness, and Disability Day shows from Brainwaves, Small Talk, Refugee Radio and much more, as well as live music with Are You Looking at Me? Wednesday 3rd of December, 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. on 3CR, 8:55 a.m.
Okay, and on the line we have Ray Jordan. Ray's facilitator of All Aboard, and I'll just All Aboard is, and it's actually called the All Aboard Action Network, and just it the information before me says it's a collaboration between accessibility advocates, community sector organisations, and local government to raise concerns about the level of access provided by Victoria's public transport system. It's inaccessible, is unacceptable, we are fighting for trains, etc. But all that, Ray, before we go into more detail, how did All Aboard come about?
Well, hi, Kevin. All Aboard started back in about 2010 or 2011 when VCOS, the Victorian Council of Social Services, ran a sort of a survey thing. They called it the Accessible Transport Watch Project, where they got people with disabilities, all kinds of disabilities, to make notes on their journeys on a train, tram, bus, taxi, and sort of fill in a survey and send them in, and then a report was generated from all of that. It went for about 12 months or something like that. Mm. And I just kind of wandered along to the launch of the report, having filled in a couple of the surveys, and thought, well, this is a pretty interesting thing to get involved in. So that was back in around, I guess, 2011 sometime. And I've been involved in it ever since.
Oh, excellent. In fact, you're the facilitator these days.
Well, I am now, yes.
And you've got a list of major issues that you say need to be done to make public transport properly accessible. Yeah. We may as well, I think it's best ways to go through them one by one.
Sure.
I hope we get through them all before the end of the show. Planner Journey's the first one.
Ah, exactly right. So I was actually listening to Martin. You were talking with just a few minutes ago, and so I'm not sure if I can add a lot to what he's already said. Boy, he's a pretty experienced advocate. However, planning a journey involves looking at a website or looking on a transport a timetable or something like that, making sure that everybody can get the information they need, so that if somebody's blind, for example, that information needs to be in a format that that they can understand and get the information they need. Somebody who has difficulty understanding complex words and concepts, and there's a lot of us, and people who need to plan a journey based around wheelchair accessibility, and that's me. So all that stuff, you need to do that, be able to do that in advance, because as we know, not the entire transport system is accessible to all people. So you've really got to know which bits are and which bits are not accessible, which bits you can use, which bits you can't, and plan around that. So it's all about planning. Really
On that point we raised with Martin, the campaign around St Kilda Port Melbourne, at that time it made it totally inaccessible. Now, you tell me that most of those stops now are accessible, but it's taken a long time to get there.
It has. Now there are, both of those routes now have a tram running on it rather than a train, but they take the same basic route and have been extended. For example, St Kilda goes a little further than where the train went, turned onto...
It goes down to Barclay Street.
Yeah. And most of those stops are accessible, I know that PTV are working to make them all accessible eventually. But most of them are, and it's quite a good journey. I've done that myself a couple of times.
Oh, well, good. The next of your dot points is get to boarding point. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's pretty important for getting on public transport.
Exactly right. So that's all about getting from... And that journey starts from home or wherever, or leaving the office or leaving work for those of us who with disabilities who are lucky enough to get a job. So it's about making sure that you can actually get to the train station or the bus station, bus stop or tram stop. you know, so important. That's you know, it's footpaths, it's road crossings, it's making sure there's a made path right up to the train platform, all of that kind of stuff.
And indeed, I mean, we suppose we should make the point here that the vast majority of people with a disability of some sort are probably on a pension of some sort as well, or on limited income.
Mm.
And so they really do rely very heavily on public transport.
Well, exactly right. You know, there's a lot of us who... there's two reasons why people won't drive a car. Two main reasons why people with disability won't drive a car. One is because they can't afford them because they're on a limited income, as you said. And it's either because they're on a pension or because they just are unable to work a full-time job for, you know, various reasons. Somebody with disability usually has some kind of a medical issue, and therefore it involves going to doctors or therapy or something like that. So they're not able to hold down a full-time job. One of the other reasons why people won't drive a car is because they simply physically cannot do so. So therefore, public transport becomes, for many, many people, essential. It's not an option, it's essential.
Mm. Yep, and the next dot point, here we go, board safely and efficiently.
Uh-huh. What I had in mind when I wrote that was that I've had a number of fights, disagreements, if you like, with the transport authorities about being able to get from the platform onto the train or from the platform onto a tram in those situations where tram platforms are actually available. So, the term mind the gap comes to mind. Mm. You know, making sure you can actually safely get on board. Buses, there you go. For somebody in a wheelchair, if a bus doesn't pull up to the curb properly, then the ramp that the driver flips out can be very, very steep and therefore unsafe. There's a whole bunch of issues around that.
And, of course, Martin's own accident at Richmond Station is a good example of that point, getting boarding safely.
Absolutely. And I don't know the details of Martin's accident, but I suspect what happened is he put his foot down in between the train and the platform.
Well, and what happened, in fact, was with his cane, he felt for the door of the train and he put his cane out and felt the opening, but it was indeed the space between the carriages.
Wow.
And he thought it was the door of the train, so he just stepped in and then fell to the ground, obviously. So that's how it happened, and he had, as we said in the interview, he had campaigned against getting guards off trains for that very purpose.
Mm, boy, oh boy! Now that's just a little ironic thing there. I noticed that on some station platforms, stenciled in paint on the edge of the platform is the words "Mind the Gap," but of course that's of absolutely no benefit to somebody.
If you can't read it, bit of a problem.
You know, somebody thought that was a good idea. Instead of actually fixing the gap, they thought a sign would do the job.
And the next one is pay fares.
Exactly. I mean, we all need to pay our fair share. You know, and so it's about making sure that it's possible to pay the fare with the Mikey system, ensuring that the card readers are of an appropriate height where everybody could read them, or provide the information so that again, somebody who's blind, for example, can know how much they've got left on their card. Maybe, and this comes to children as well. You know, children are kind of fairly short creatures. I don't know. Most children probably can't read the screen on the Mikey reader because it's up so high.
Yes, I think even for people like me, sometimes it's very difficult to find the signs and read them and get it, make any sense of the whole thing.
Yep.
Ride safely. Well, that's a pretty obvious one, I suppose.
Exactly right. There's a number of issues coming there. Things like the bus or the tram driver kind of waiting until people are seated before they take off, particularly people who are could be vulnerable to the vehicle taking off in a bit of a hurry. You know, somebody elderly or somebody with a disability who's kind of hanging on for dear life to the handrails as they get on the bus, for example. It's fairly obvious that it would be a great idea to wait until they get seated before the bus takes off. I was actually just talking to a mother of of an adult, a young adult woman who has a disability and a cognitive disability, and she said that that is a very great disincentive for her to be travelling on public transport. It's just the fear of the bus going around the corner too fast, or taking off before she's got seated. So that her disability isn't physical, but it's a mental kind of a thing, and it's all of these things.
Yes. Yeah.
Every day I'm learning something new about some other person. I'm trying to put myself in as the sort of convener of all aboard. Try to put myself in everybody else's shoes. See how they see public transport and what the issues are for them. And it's opened up my world. Let me tell you.
Yes. In fact, the American comedian Bob Newhart years ago, I don't know if you heard it, had a skit called the bus driving instructor. And he was one of the things he had to learn was how to make the passengers spin all the way to the back of the bus. It was quite a good send up. The next thing is know where they are during the journey.
Oh, absolutely. Here's a good one. Now, this is not just for people with disabilities. This is everybody. I've gone to places where I'm not familiar, both here in Melbourne and in other places as well. And it's in those places, and the US is quite common for this, is they have both visual and audible information systems to tell you where you are. It announces the major stops. You know, you're at the corner of this street and that street, and in some cases they'll even tell you what the closest, there's a shopping centre just around the corner there, or there's a church, or there's a, you know, some place of interest anyway. So you get an idea of where you are. That sort of thing here in Melbourne or in Victoria is actually uncommon. Trains obviously have it, and they work most of the time. Trams are just rolling that sort of a system out. It's way behind it's the time frame that should have happened. But they're actually quite uncommon in buses. Mm. So you really, to know where you are, what you've got to be doing is looking out the window and hoping you...
yes, that's right. And that, I mean, if I'm in a strange place, I'm in the same boat. I know I've got to get off at some place, but you are looking out in a bus because you're never sure. But if you can't see, then that becomes clearly a major problem.
Absolutely, yes. So you just, you need all of that stuff. And then, now, just as a little side note here, there has been a bit of a push from some safety advocates to get people in wheelchairs particularly to face backwards in a bus and possibly a tram too. I'm not sure about that, but certainly buses.
So they can see what they missed.
Exactly. How the hell, you know, you can see where you've been. But that doesn't help you in identifying when you're stopped.
That's right. Oh, that was my stop. Yeah, there it goes.
Exactly.
Yes, all right. But I have been on trains. I mean, it's rare, but I've been on trains where the system that tells you the next stop, etc., is out of kilter.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a problem, I imagine.
Yeah, it's even worse than no information at all.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to, you know, I close my eyes and when that happens to me, and you're quite right, it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you close your eyes and you think, well, if I... couldn't look out the window and see the sign on the platform, I would think I would be in that place that was just announced, and be panicking if I were blind.
Well, if you got off and then found you in the wrong spot, suddenly you're disoriented, I presume. Okay, and a light safely. Well, that's again, I presume, a pretty obvious one, but it's an important one.
Sort of fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah,
I guess.
But I mean even. Even if you can see and you're getting off a tram, you've got to be very careful that cars are going to stop.
Yes. And again, a story from a meeting just yesterday when the person was relating a very near miss. And we see it all the time. I think, the platform tram stops, for example, will fix that issue. But there are still, there are many, many, many places where... trams run on streets that are not wide enough for the types of platform tram stops that we've come to know in the last.
But there are a couple of them, like the one outside Parliament Station, where the cars actually come through the middle of the stop, in a sense. Mm. So if you can't see them, if the car doesn't stop and you just hear the tram stop and you walk out, it's still a dangerous situation if you can't if you can't see that the car mightn't be going to stop.
That's right. I think it is that particular station, that tram stop. That's the one on MacArthur Street.
Yes, one on MacArthur Street. Yeah,
I'm a fan of that. I think there needs to be some tweaking, but I'm a big fan of that style of stop. I think perhaps they need some warning lights or some extra lines on the road to make it a little bit more obvious to car drivers. But certainly, from the point of view of the wheelchair user, the boarding is very, very easy because there are no steps,
Oh, it's a good stop for that. Yes, it's just that point of the cars being in the middle. If they don't stop, then you're in a bit of trouble.
Exactly right.
Yeah. to put it mildly. make easy connections. Now, that's again, but that's one that really applies to everybody, doesn't it?
It does. What I had in mind, one of the things I had in mind when I wrote that one was where you want to go from the trains. You got off a train, and the next leg of your journey involves the bus, and perhaps the path to the bus involves going across the grass, which after it's been raining for 3 days is more like mud. Getting your wheelchair across that. Anybody getting across that is probably.
Yes, that's right. But it's, I mean, that's so. If you've got a disability of something, if you're in a wheelchair or you can't see, then those things need to be made simple so you know where you're going.
That's right.
And the connection is such that you can use it.
Yeah, exactly right. There's one little spot that keeps coming up in my mind where getting off the train and onto the bus is quite a difficult thing for that very reason. And then again, somebody who's blind, there's no obvious path for them to follow to get to that bus stop. There's a lot of work need to be done.
Yep.
Done on all those areas.
Yeah, the one you raise later on, I've got a few other points you make, but wheelchair accessible taxi passengers. Now that's clearly important, but they have to wait long times, and I know I've heard this complaint from a lot of people who say they have to wait because they're dependent upon a wheelchair accessible taxi.
Yeah.
But it also raises the point. I always find it unjust in that with limited incomes, even the half fare taxi service is still very expensive to have to use that. Vis-a-vis normal public transport fares.
Oh it is. Once you particularly if you need to go somewhere that's across the other side of town, to a doctor's appointment, and there are an awful lot of people with disabilities who need to make regular, medical appointments. And if a train or a tram or a bus isn't easily accessible in their area, and there's an awful lot of places in Melbourne where you've got to go a long way to find a bus or a train or a tram, then taxis are your only option. And yes, they can get very expensive, even with a half-price card. And how do you get around that? I don't have an answer to that. But
the answer would be far greater government subsidies, so you actually can do it at a public transport rate. I would have thought.
Well, there's an interesting thing. Now, whilst I'm not a huge fan of substituting public transport for more shared ride type transport, there certainly is a demand for it, I think. In the US, for example, they have this system called paratransit, and they call it different names in different cities. But it's where a van, which is a really big taxi, it'll take maybe 3 or 4 wheelchairs and some other people as well. It's got some normal seating as well, with trained drivers, and it'll be a shared ride thing. So you'll call up the day before and say, I need to be at the hospital at such and such a time, and the van will come. They'll tell you what time to be ready. They'll give you. You may need a. There'll be a half hour window or something like that. You need to be ready, but it may already have 1 or 2 people on board, so they may have to either drop off or pick up another couple of people on the way to your destination. So it could take a little while to get there, but the fare is exactly the same as what you would have paid on public transport. So it's a little less convenient than a taxi, but much, much, much more affordable.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? You do say at one point here a very low percentage of bus stops are compliant with the transport standards and don't provide access to wheelchairs, most of them. And none of Melbourne's trains have the number of allocated spaces available for mobility aid users that are required under the transport standards. What are the transport standards?
Right, so the train...
We've got about 3 or 4 minutes, though.
Very, very quickly then. So, first of all, the Disability Discrimination Act is the law that says to everybody, it is unlawful for you to discriminate against somebody because of a disability. So that was enacted in 1992. But it's not very specific. There's a lot of open areas in it. So in 2002, a document called the Disability Standards for Accessible Public Transport was formed under the DDA. So it's the law. And it's got a whole lot of detail about what public transport accessibility is. It's got to have this many accessible allocated spaces in a train and a tram and a bus. The ramps have to be no more than this steep. I've got my hands here saying how steep it is. So
we can see that. Yeah, it looks good.
A whole lot of details. Where handrails have to be. How about announcements and how clear they have to be, and information for people with all kinds of disabilities. All of those sorts of things. It's a big document. It's got lots of detail. So one of the things it says is that on a train, for example, there has to be 2 allocated wheelchair spaces per carriage. So in a Melbourne train, for example, there are 6 carriages, so 6 times 2 is 12 allocated spaces. Now they don't have to be spread across the whole train. They can all be grouped together if they want. That's part of what the standard says. Yeah. So in other words, we're supposed to have 12 spaces on a train. And in fact, on the new trains there are. The trouble is you can't get to them because the metro trains here in Melbourne only allow you to board if you're in a wheelchair at the front door.
At the front with the driver. And that's because, of course, the guard used to do that, but now, of course, the driver does.
And of course, you can't imagine, you can't have the driver running halfway down the train to put a ramp down because the trains would never get anywhere. We all get that. But there's got to be a better solution. But because of that... only those couple of accessible spaces that are in the front of the train are actually usable. All the others are sitting there, and somebody in a wheelchair just can't get to them. So they're sort of complying with the law, but they're not.
Yeah, and just to finish up, because the point I raised at the start and I raised with you on the phone in the last couple of days, it always seems to me that governments say that accessibility will happen within 15 years, it'll all be totally accessible, but it's always within 15 years, it never changes.
Yeah, it's kind of a moving target, isn't it?
Is it what?
Those disability standards for accessible public transport...
I think it's a moving non-target, that's the problem.
Those standards have actually got an end date. By the end of 2032, every single piece of public transport is by law required to be totally accessible. And there's milestone targets along the way. So some parts are supposed to be 100% accessible, from now or from the end of 2012 or whatever it was. There's a whole lot of big detail. But by the end of 2032, which is
eight years.
That's when the whole of the public transport system right across Australia. So that's not just Melbourne. We're talking about regional areas, which the people in Shepparton and Bendigo are going to be jumping up and down about. Will it happen? Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll probably talk to you next year and see how many years away it is, Ray. All right, mate, look, we've got to go, but thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
It's been quite good. Ray Jordan, as I said, is facilitator of All Aboard Action Network, and I think we got from the interview what that's all about. So thanks, Ray, and we will talk to you again. Yeah, thanks a lot. Okay, well, he's gone. He doesn't talk to me. I've got to go now. Next week's, and we're going to do transport next week and some energy stuff. I might do a follow-up with Dave Sweeney because we got interrupted last time we were talking about uranium, and I did want to follow up on the MacArthur River situation in the Northern Territory. So that's pretty close to Melbourne in terms of city limits, I reckon. So we're off. I have no idea what the next show is today. Have you got any idea? Because it's... Refugee Radio special, yeah, because I knew that obviously it wasn't Joe today, and anyway, he probably wouldn't be doing much. Oh, he could be, because he deals with people with disabilities. That's his specialty, actually, yeah, he's a doctor. So there you are, I could have done it. Okay, but he's in Ballarat. Okay, I'm off now. Ta-da, see you next week.
City Limits, brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.